Perhaps they did, Eminence. There's nothing the monks won't do to destroy us. But that's only jealousy, because we're succeeding where they're failing. Surely God will show them the error of their ways. Perhaps the Englishman will remove himself before he does any harm. His rutters prove him to be what he is, a pirate and leader of pirates.
Read them to Torrenagar, Martin. The parts where he describes the sacking of the defenseless settlements from Africa to Chile, and the lists of plunder, and all the killings.
Perhaps we should wait, Eminence. We can always produce the rutters. Let's hope he'll damn himself without them.
Father Alvito wiped the palms of his hands again. He could feel Blackthorn's eyes on him.
God have mercy on you, he thought. For what you've said today to Torrenaga, your life's not worth a counterfeit mite. And worse, your soul's beyond redemption. You're crucified, even without the evidence in your rutters.
Should we send them back to Father Sebastião, so he can return them to Murat?
What would Torrenaga do if the papers were never discovered? No, that'd be too dangerous for Murat.
The door at the far end shivered open.
Lord Ishido wishes to see you.
Sire, Naga announced.
He's here in the corridor, and he wishes to see you. At once, he says.
All of you, go back to your places,
Torrenaga said to his men. He was instantly obeyed. But all samurai sat facing the door, Hiromatsu at their head, swords eased in their scabbards.
Naga-san, tell Lord Ishido he is always welcome. Ask him to come in.
The tall man strode into the room. 10 of his samurai, greys, followed, but they remained at the doorway, and at his signal, sat cross-legged. Torrenaga bowed with precise formality, and the bow was returned with equal exactitude. Father Alvito blessed his luck that he was present. The impending clash between the two rival leaders would completely affect the course of the empire and the future of Mother Church in Japan. So any clue or direct information that might help the Jesuits to decide where to throw their influence would be of immeasurable importance. Ishido was Zen Buddhist and fanatically anti-Christian. Torrenaga was Zen Buddhist and openly sympathetic. But most Christian daimyos supported Ishido, fearing, with justification, Father Alvito believed, the ascendance of Torrenaga. The Christian daimyos felt that if Torrenaga eliminated Ishido's influence from the Council of Regents, Torrenaga would usurp all power for himself. And once he had power, they believed he would implement the Taiko's expulsion edicts and stamp out the true faith. If, however, Torrenaga was eliminated, the succession, a weak succession, would be assured, and the Mother Church would prosper. As the allegiance of the Christian daimyos wavered, so it was with all the other daimyos in the land, and the balance of power between the two leaders fluctuated constantly, so no one knew for certain which side was, in reality, the most powerful. Even he, Father Alvito, the most informed European in the empire, could not say for certain which side even the Christian daimyos would actually support when the clash became open, or which faction would prevail. He watched Torrenaga walk off the dais, through the encircling safety of his men.
Welcome, Lord Ishido. Please sit there.
Torrenaga gestured at the single cushion on the dais.
I'd like you to be comfortable.
Thank you, no, Lord Torrenaga.
Ishido Kazunari was lean and swarthy and very tough, a year younger than Torrenaga. They were ancient enemies. 80,000 samurai in and around Osaka Castle did his bidding, for he was commander of the garrison, and therefore commander of the heir's bodyguard, chief general of the armies of the West, conqueror of Korea, member of the Council of Regents, and formerly inspector general of all the late Taiko's armies, which were legally all the armies of all daimyos throughout the realm.
Thank you, no, he repeated. had to be embarrassed to be comfortable, while you were not, eh? One day I will take your cushion, but not today.
A current of anger went through the Browns at Ishido's implied threat, but Torunaga replied amiably.
You came at a most opportune moment. I was just finishing interviewing the new barbarian. Tsuku-san, please tell him to stand up.
The priest did as he was bidden. He felt Ishido's hostility from across the room. Apart from being anti-Christian, Ishido had always been vigorous in his condemnation of all Europeans and wanted the empire totally closed to them. Ishido looked at Blackthorn with pronounced distaste.
I heard he was ugly, but I didn't realize how ugly. Rumor has it that he's a pirate. Is he?
Can you doubt it? And he's also a liar.
Then before you crucify him, please let me have him for half a day. The heir might be amused to see him, with his head on first.
Ishido laughed roughly.
Or perhaps he should be taught to dance like a bear. Then you could exhibit him throughout the empire. The freak from the east.
Though it was true that Blackthorn had, uniquely, come out of the eastern seas, unlike the Portuguese, who always came from the south and hence were called southern barbarians, Ishido was blatantly implying that Torunaga, who dominated the eastern provinces, was the true freak. But Torunaga merely smiled as though he did not understand.
You're a man of vast humor, Lord Ishido, he said. But I agree, the sooner the barbarian's removed, the better. He's long-winded, arrogant, loud-mouthed, an oddity, yes. But one of little value, and with no manners whatsoever. Naga-san, send some men and put him with the common criminals. Tsuku-san, tell him to follow them.
Captain Pilot, you are to follow those men.
Where am I going?
Father Alvito hesitated. He was glad that he had won, but his opponent was brave and had an immortal soul which could yet be saved.
You are to be detained, he said.
For how long?
I don't know, my son. Until Lord Torunaga decides.
Chapter 12. As Torunaga watched the barbarian leave the room, he took his mind regretfully off the startling interview and came to grips with the more immediate problem of Ishido. Torunaga had decided not to dismiss the priest, knowing it would further infuriate Ishido, even though he was equally certain the continued presence of the priest might be dangerous.
The less foreigners know, the better. The less anyone knows, the better, he thought. Will Tsuku-san's influence on the Christian daimyos be for me or against me? Until today, I would have trusted him implicitly. But there were some strange moments with the barbarian that I don't yet understand.
Ishido deliberately did not follow the usual courtesies, but came instantly to the point.
Again, I must ask, what is your answer to the Council of Regents?
Again, I repeat, as president of the Council of Regents, I do not believe any answer is necessary. I've made a few minor family relationships that are unimportant. No answer is required.
You betrothed your son, Naga-san, to the daughter of Lord Masamune. Marry one of your granddaughters, the Lord Zatake's son and heir. Another granddaughter, the Lord Kiyama's son. All the marriages are to feudal lords or their close relations, and therefore not minor, and absolutely contrary to our master's orders.
Our late master, the Taiko, has been dead a year.
Unfortunately.
Yes. I regret my brother-in-law's death, and would have preferred him alive and still guiding the destiny of the empire.
Torunaga added pleasantly, turning a knife in a constant wound.
If my brother-in-law were alive, there's no doubt he would approve these family connections.
His instructions applied to marriages that threatened the succession of his house. I don't threaten his house or my nephew Yeomon, the heir. I am content as Lord of the Canto. I seek no more territory. I am at peace with my neighbors, and wish his peace to continue. By the Lord Buddha, I'll not be the first to break the peace.
For 6 centuries, the realm had been seared by constant civil war. 35 years ago, a minor daimyo called Gorodo had taken possession of Kyoto, abetted mainly by Torinaga. Over the next 2 decades, this warrior had miraculously subdued half of Japan, made a mountain of skulls, and declared himself dictator. Still not yet powerful enough to petition the reigning emperor to grant him the title shogun, though he was vaguely descended from a branch of the Hujimotos. Then, 16 years ago, Gorodo was assassinated by one of his generals, and his power fell into the hands of his chief vassal and most brilliant general, the peasant Nakamura. In 4 short years, General Nakamura, helped by Torinaga, Ishido, and others, obliterated Gorodo's descendants, and brought the whole of Japan under his absolute sole control, the first time in history that one man had subjugated all the realm. In triumph, he went to Kyoto to bow before Gonijo, the son of heaven. There, because he was born peasant, Nakamura had had to accept the lesser title of Kampak, chief advisor, which later he renounced in favor of his son, taking for himself the title Taiko. But every daimyo bowed before him, even Torinaga. Incredibly, there had been complete peace for 12 years. Last year, the Taiko had died.
By the Lord Buddha, Torinaga said again, I'll not be the first to break the peace. But you will go to war. A wise man prepares for treachery, ne? There are evil men in every province. Some are in high places. We both know the limitless extent of treachery in the hearts of men.
Torinaga stiffened.
Where the Taiko left a legacy of unity, now we are split into my east and your west. The Council of Regents is divided. The daimyos are at odds. A council cannot rule a maggot-infested hamlet, let alone an empire. The sooner the Taiko's son is of age, the better. The sooner there's another Kampak, the better. Or perhaps shogun?
Ishido said insinuatingly.
Kampak or shogun or Taiko, the power is the same,
Torinaga said.
Of what real value is a title? The power is the only important thing. Gorodo never became shogun. Nakamura was more than content as Kampak and later Taiko. He ruled, and that is the important thing. What does it matter that my brother-in-law was once a peasant? What does it matter that my family is ancient? What does it matter that you're low-born? You're a general, a liege lord, even one of the Council of Regents. It matters very much, Ishido thought. You know it. I know it. Every daimyo knows it. Even the Taiko knew it. Yeomon is 7. In 7 years, he becomes Kampak. Until that time. In 8 years, General Ishido, that's our historic law. When my nephew is 15, he becomes adult and inherits. Until that time, we 5 regents rule in his name. That's what our late master willed. Yes, and he also ordered that no hostages were to be taken by regents against one another. Lady Ochiba, the mother of the heir, is hostage in your castle at Edo, against your safety here, and that also violates his will. You formally agreed to obey his covenants, as did all the regents. You even signed the document in your own blood.
Torinaga sighed.
The Lady Ochiba is visiting Edo where her only sister is in labor. Her sister is married to my son and heir. My son's place is in Edo, while I am here. What's more natural than for a sister to visit a sister at such a time? Isn't she honored? Perhaps I'll have a first grandson, eh? The mother of the heir is the most important lady in the empire. She should not be in...
Ishido was going to say enemy hands, but he thought better of it.
In an unusual city.
He paused, then added clearly,
"The council would like you to order her home today."
Toranaga avoided the trap.
"I repeat, the Lady Ochiba's no hostage, and therefore is not under my orders, and never was." "Then let me put it differently. The council requests her presence in Osaka instantly."
"Who requests this?"
"I do. Lord Sugiyama, Lord Onoshi, and Lord Kiyama. Further, we're all agreed we wait here until she's back in Osaka. Here are their signatures."
Toranaga was livid. Thus far he had manipulated the council so that voting was always split 2-3. He had never been able to win a 4-1 against Ishido, but neither had Ishido against him. 4-1 meant isolation and disaster.
Why had Onoshi defected? And Kiyama? Both implacable enemies, even before they had converted to the foreign religion. And what hold had Ishido now over them?
Ishido knew that he had shattered his enemy. But one move remained to make victory complete. So he implemented the plan that he and Onoshi had agreed upon.
"We regents are all agreed that the time has come to finish with those who are planning to usurp my master's power and kill the heir. Traitors will be condemned. They will be exhibited in the streets as common criminals with all their generations, and then they will be executed like common criminals with all their generations. Fujimoto, Takashima, lowborn, highborn, no matter who. Even Minowara."
A gasp of rage broke from every Toranaga samurai, for such sacrilege against the semi-regal families was unthinkable. Then the young samurai, Usagi, Hiromatsu's grandson-in-law, was on his feet, flushed with anger. He ripped out his killing sword and leapt at Ishido, the naked blade readied for the two-handed slash. Ishido was prepared for the death blow and made no move to defend himself. This was what he had planned for, hoped for, and his men had been ordered not to interfere until he was dead. If he, Ishido, were killed here, now, by a Toranaga samurai, the whole Osaka garrison could fall on Toranaga legitimately and slay him, irrespective of the hostage. Then the Lady Ochiba would be eliminated in retaliation by Toranaga's sons, and the remaining regents would be forced to move jointly against the Yoshi clan, who, now isolated, would be stamped out. Only then would the heir's succession be granted, and he, Ishido, would have done his duty to the Daiko. But the blow did not come. At the last moment, Usagi came to his senses and tremulously sheathed the sword.
"Your pardon, Lord Toranaga,"
he said, kneeling abjectly.
"I could not bear the shame of having you hear such insults. I ask permission. I apologize, and I ask permission to commit seppuku immediately, for I cannot live with this shame."
Though Toranaga had remained still, he had been ready to intercept the blow, and he knew Hiromatsu was ready, and that others would have been ready also, and that probably Ishido would only have been wounded. He understood, too, why Ishido had been so insulting and inflammatory.
"I will repay you with an enormity of interest, Ishido,"
he promised silently. Toranaga gave his attention to the kneeling youth.
"How dare you imply that anything Lord Ishido said was meant in any way as an insult to me? Of course he would never be so impolite. How dare you listen to conversations that do not concern you? No, you will not be allowed to commit seppuku. That's an honor. You have no honor, and no self-discipline. You will be crucified like a common criminal today. Your swords will be broken and buried in the Eta village. Your son will be buried in the Eta village. Your head will be put on a spike for all the population to jeer at, with a sign on it, "This man was born samurai by mistake. His name has ceased to be."
With a supreme effort, Usagi controlled his breathing, but the sweat dripped and the shame of it tortured him. He bowed to Toranaga, accepting his fate with outward calm. Hiromatsu walked forward and tore both swords from his grandson-in-law's belt.
"Lord Toranaga," he said gravely, "with your permission, I will personally see that your orders are carried out."
Toranaga nodded. The youth bowed a last time, then began to get up, but Hiromatsu pushed him back on the floor.
"Samurai walk," he said. "So do men, but you're neither. You will crawl to your death."
Silently, Usagi obeyed, and all in the room were warmed by the strength of the youth's self-discipline now, and the measure of his courage.
"He will be reborn samurai,"
they told themselves contentedly. Chapter 13. That night, Toranaga could not sleep. This was rare for him, because normally he could defer the most pressing problem until the next day, knowing that if he was alive the next day, he would solve it to the best of his ability. He had long since discovered that peaceful sleep could provide the answer to most puzzles. And if not, what did it really matter? Wasn't life just a dewdrop within a dewdrop? But tonight, there were too many perplexing questions to ponder.
What will I do about Ishido? Why has Onoshi defected to the enemy? How will I deal with the council? Have the Christian priests meddled again? Where will the next assassination attempt come from? When should Yabu be dealt with? And what must I do about the barbarian? Was he telling the truth? Curious how the barbarian came out of the eastern seas just at this time. Is that an omen? Is it his karma to be the spark that will light the powder keg?
Karma was an Indian word adopted by Japanese, part of Buddhist philosophy that referred to a person's fate in this life. His fate immutably fixed because of deeds done in a previous life. Good deeds giving a better position in this life's strata, bad deeds the reverse. Just as the deeds of this life would completely affect the next rebirth. A person was ever being reborn into this world of tears until, after enduring and suffering and learning through many lifetimes, he became perfect at long last, going to nirvana, the place of perfect peace, never having to suffer rebirth again.
Strange that Buddha, or some other god, or perhaps just karma, brought the Anjin-san to Yabu's fief. Strange that he landed at the exact village where Mura, the secret head of the Izu spy system, had been settled so many years ago, under the very nose of the Taiko and Yabu's pox-diseased father. Strange that Tsuku-san was here in Osaka to interpret, and not in Nagasaki, where he'd normally be. That also the chief priest of the Christians is here in Osaka, and also the captain general of the Portuguese. Strange that the pilot, Rodriguez, was also available to take Hiromatsu to Anjiro in time to capture the barbarian alive and take possession of the guns. Then there's Kashigi Omi, son of the man who will give me Yabu's head, if I but crook my little finger. How beautiful life is, and how sad. How fleeting, with no past and no future, only a limitless now.
Toranaga sighed.
One thing is certain. The barbarian will never leave, neither alive nor dead. He is part of the realm forever.
His ears heard almost imperceptible approaching footsteps, and his sword was ready. Each night he changed his sleeping room, his guards, and the password haphazardly, against the assassins that were always waiting. The footsteps stopped outside the shoji. Then he heard Hiromatsu's voice, and the beginning of the password.
if the truth is already clear, what is the use of meditation?
And if the truth is hidden,
Toranaga said,
it's already clear,
Hiromatsu answered correctly. The quotation was from the ancient tantric Buddhist teacher, Saraha.
Come in.
Only when Toranaga saw that it was, in truth, his counselor, did his sword relax.
Sit down.
I heard you weren't sleeping. I thought you might need something.
No. Thank you.
Toranaga observed the deepened lines around the old man's eyes.
I'm glad you're here, old friend, he said. You're sure you're all right?
Oh, yes.
Then I'll leave you. Sorry to disturb you, Lord.
No, please. Come in. I'm glad you're here. Sit down.
The old man sat down beside the door, his back straight.
I've doubled the guards.
Good.
After a while, Hiromatsu said,
About that madman. Everything was done as you ordered. Everything.
Thank you.
His wife, as soon as she heard the sentence, my granddaughter asked my permission to kill herself, to accompany her husband and her son into the great void. I refused, and ordered her to wait, pending your approval.
Hiromatsu was bleeding inside.
How terrible life is!
You did correctly.
I formally ask permission to end my life. What he did put you in mortal danger, but it was my fault. I should have detected his flaw. I failed you.
You may not commit seppuku.
Please, I formally ask permission.
No, you're needed alive.
I will obey you. But please accept my apologies.
Your apologies are accepted.
After a time, Toranaga said,
What about the barbarian?
Many things, sire. One, if you hadn't been waiting for the barbarian today, you would have been hawking since first light, and Ishido would never have enmeshed you in such a disgusting meeting. You have no choice now but to declare war on him, if you can get out of this castle and back to Edo.
Second,
and third, and 43rd, and 143rd. I'm nowhere near as clever as you, Lord Toranaga, but even I could see that everything we've been led to believe by the southern barbarians is not true.
Hiromatsu was glad to talk. It helped ease the hurt.
But if there are two Christian religions which hate each other, and if the Portuguese are part of the bigger Spanish nation, and if this new barbarian's country, whatever it was called, wars on both and beats them, and if this same country's an island nation like ours, and the greatest if of all, if he's telling the truth, and if the priest's saying accurately what the barbarian was saying, well, you can put all these ifs together, and make sense out of them, and a plan. I can't, so sorry. I only know what I saw at Anjiro, and aboard the ship. That the Anjin-san is very strong in his head, weak in his body presently, though that would be because of the long voyage, and dominating at sea. I don't understand anything about him. How could he be all of these things, yet allow a man to piss on his back? Why did he save Yabu's life after what the man did to him? And also the life of his self-admitted enemy, the Portuguese Rodrigo. My head spins from so many questions, as though I'm sodden with sake.
Hiromatsu paused. He was very weary.
But I think we should keep him on land, and all like him, if others follow, and kill them all very quickly.
What about Yabu?
Order him to commit seppuku tonight.
Why?
He's got no manners. You foretold what he'd do when I arrived at Anjiro. He was going to steal your property. And he's a liar. Don't bother to see him tomorrow, as you've arranged. Instead, let me take him your order now. You'll have to kill him sooner or later. Better now, when he's accessible,
with none of his own vassals surrounding him. I advise no delay. There was a soft knock on the inner door.
Tora-chan?
Toranaga smiled as he always did at that very special voice, with that special diminutive. Yes, Kiri-san?
I've taken the liberty, Lord, of bringing cha for you and your guest. May I please come in?
Yes. Both men returned her bow. Kiri closed the door and busied herself with the pouring. She was 53 and substantial, matron of Toranaga's ladies-in-waiting, Kiritsubo no Toshiko, nicknamed Kiri, the oldest of the ladies of his court. Her hair was grey-flecked, her waist thick, but her face sparkled with an eternal joy.
You shouldn't be awake. No, not at this time of night, Tora-chan. It will be dawn soon, and I suppose then you'll be out in the hills with your hawks, ne? You need sleep.
Yes, Kiri-chan. Toranaga patted her vast rump affectionately.
Please don't Kiri-chan me, Kiri laughed. I'm an old woman, and I need lots of respect. Your other ladies give me enough trouble as it is. Kiritsubo Toshiko-san, if you please, my lord Yoshi Toranaga no Chikitada.
There, you see, Hiromatsu? After 20 years, she still tries to dominate me.
So sorry. It's more than 30 years, Tora-sama, she said proudly. And you were as manageable then as you are now.
When Toranaga was in his 20s, he'd been a hostage too, then of the despotic Ikawa Tadazuki, lord of Suruga and Totomi, father of the present Ikawa Jikyu, who was Yabu's enemy. The samurai responsible for Toranaga's good conduct had just taken Kiritsubo as his second wife. She was 17 then. Together, this samurai and Kiri, his wife, had treated Toranaga honorably, given him wise counsel, and then when Toranaga had rebelled against Tadazuki and joined Goruda, had followed him with many warriors and had fought bravely at his side. Later, in the fighting for the capital, Kiri's husband had been killed. Toranaga had asked her if she would become one of his consorts, and she had accepted gladly. In those days, she was not fat. But she was equally protective and equally wise. That was her 19th year, his 24th, and she had been a focus of his household ever since. Kiri was very shrewd and very capable. For years now, she had run his household and kept it free of trouble.
As free of trouble as any household with women could ever be, Toranaga thought. You're getting fat, he said, not minding that she was fat.
Lord Toranaga, in front of Lord Toda. Oh, so sorry. I shall have to commit seppuku. Or at least, I'll have to shave my head and become a nun. And I thought I was so young and slender.
She burst out laughing.
Actually, I agree. I have a fat rump. But what can I do? I just like to eat. And that's Buddha's problem. And my karma, ne?
She offered the cha.
There. Now I'll be off. Would you like me to send the Lady Sazuko?
No, my thoughtful Kiri-san. No, thank you. We'll talk for a little. Then I'll sleep.
Good night, Tora-sama. Sweet dreamlessness.
She bowed to him and to Hiromatsu, and then she was gone. They sipped their tea appreciatively. Toranaga said,
I'm always sorry we never had a son, Kiri-san and I. Once she conceived, but she miscarried. That was when we were at the Battle of Nagakude.
Ah, that one.
Yes.
This was just after the dictator Goruda had been assassinated when General Nakamura, the Taiko-to-be, was trying to consolidate all power into his own hands. At that time, the issue was in doubt, as Toranaga supported one of Goruda's sons, the legal heir. Nakamura came against Toranaga near the little village of Nagakude, and his force was mauled and routed, and he lost that battle. Toranaga retreated cleverly, pursued by a new army, now commanded for Nakamura by Hiromatsu. But Toranaga avoided the trap and escaped to his home provinces, his whole army intact, ready to battle again. 50,000 men died at Nagakude, very few of them Toranagas. In his wisdom, the Taiko-to-be called off the civil war against Toranaga, though he would have won. Nagakude was the only battle the Taiko had ever lost, and Toranaga the only general who had ever beaten him.
"I'm glad we never joined battle, sire," Hiramatsu said.
"Yes. You would have won."
"No. The Taiko was the greatest general, and the wisest, cleverest man that has ever been."
Hiramatsu smiled.
"Yes. Except you." "No, you're wrong. That's why I became his vassal."
"I'm sorry he's dead."
"Yes. And Goroda. He was a fine man, eh? So many good men dead."
Hiramatsu unconsciously turned and twisted the battered scabbard.
"You'll have to move against Ishido. That will force every daimyo to choose sides, once and for all. We'll win the war eventually. Then you can disband the council and become shogun." "I don't seek that honor,"
Toranaga said sharply.
"How many times do I have to say it?"
"Your pardon, sire."
"I know. But I feel it would be best for Japan." "That's treason."
"Against whom, lord?"
"Against the Taiko?"
"He's dead."
"Against his last will and testament?"
"That's a piece of paper."
"Against the boy Yeimon?" "Yeimon's the son of a peasant who usurped the power and heritage of a general whose heirs he stamped out. We were Goroda's allies, then the Taiko's vassals."
"Yes,
but they're both very dead."
"Would you advise that if you were one of the regents?"
"No, but then I'm not one of the regents, and I'm very glad. I'm your vassal only. I chose sides a year ago. I did this freely."
"Why?" Toranaga had never asked him before.
"Because you're a man, because you're Minowara, and because you'll do the wise thing. What you said to Ishido was right. We're not a people to be ruled by committee. We need a leader. Whom should I have chosen to serve of the five regents? Lord Onoshi? Yes, he's a very wise man and a good general. But he's Christian and a cripple, and his flesh is so rotten with leprosy that he stinks from 50 paces. Lord Sugiyama? He's the richest daimyo in the land. His family's as ancient as yours. But he's a gutless turncoat, and we both know him from eternity. Lord Kiyama? Wise, brave, a great general, and an old comrade. But he's Christian too, and I think we have enough gods of our own in this land of the gods not to be so arrogant as to worship only one. Ishido? I've detested that treacherous peasant's offal as long as I've known him, and the only reason I never killed him was because he was the Taiko's dog."
His leathery face cracked into a smile.
"So you see, Yoshi Toranaga no Minowara, you gave me no choice. And if I go against your advice, if I manipulate the Council of Regents, even Ishido, and put Yeimon into power? Whatever you do is wise, but all the regents would like you dead. That's the truth. I advocate immediate war, immediate, before they isolate you, or more probably murder you."
Toranaga thought about his enemies. They were powerful and abundant. It would take him all of 3 weeks to get back to Edo, traveling the Tokaido Road, the main trunk road that followed the coast between Edo and Osaka. To go by ship was more dangerous and perhaps more time-consuming, except by galley, which could travel against wind and tide. Toranaga's mind ranged again over the plan he had decided upon. He could find no flaw in it.
"I heard secretly yesterday that Ishido's mother is visiting her grandson in Nagoya," he said,
and Hiramatsu was at once attentive. Nagoya was a huge city-state that was as yet not committed to either side.
"The lady should be invited by the abbot to visit the Joji Temple, to see the cherry blossoms."
"Immediately," Hiramatsu said, "by carrier pigeon."
The Joji Temple was famous for three things. its avenue of cherry trees, the militancy of its Zen Buddhist monks, and its open, undying fidelity to Torunaga, who had, years ago, paid for the building of the temple and maintained its upkeep ever since.
The blossoms will be past their prime, but she will be there tomorrow. I don't doubt the venerable lady will want to stay a few days. It's so calming. Her grandson should go too, eh? No, just her. That would make the abbot's invitation too obvious. Next, send a secret cipher to my son, Sudara. I leave Osaka the moment the council concludes this session. In 4 days. Send it by runner, and confirm it by carrier pigeon tomorrow.
Hiromatsu's disapproval was apparent.
Then can I order up 10,000 men at once? To Osaka?
No.
The men here are sufficient. Thank you, old friend. I think I'll sleep now.
Hiromatsu got up and stretched his shoulders.
Then at the doorway. I may give Hujiko, my granddaughter, permission to kill herself?
No.
But Hujiko's samurai, lord, and you know how mothers are about their sons. The child was her first. Hujiko can have many children. How old is she? 18? Barely 19. I will find her another husband.
Hiromatsu shook his head.
She will not accept one. I know her too well. It's her innermost wish to end her life. Please? Tell your granddaughter I do not approve of useless death. Permission is refused.
At length Hiromatsu bowed and began to leave.
How long would the barbarian live in that prison?
Torunaga asked. Hiromatsu did not turn back.
It depends how cruel a fighter he is.
Thank you.
Good night, Hiromatsu.
When he was sure that he was alone, he said quietly,
Kiri-san.
The inner door opened. She entered and knelt.
Send an immediate message to Sudara. All is well. Send it by racing pigeons. Release 3 of them at the same time at dawn. At noon, do the same again.
Yes, lord.
She went away.
One will get through, he thought. At least 4 will fall to arrows, spies, or hawks. But unless Ishido's broken our code, the message will still mean nothing to him.
The code was very private. 4 people knew it. His eldest son, Noboru. His second son and heir, Sudara. Kiri, and himself. The message deciphered meant, disregard all other messages. Activate Plan 5. By prearrangement, Plan 5 contained orders to gather all Yoshi clan leaders and their most trusted inner counselors immediately, at his capital, Edo, and to mobilize for war. The code word that signaled war was Crimson Sky. His own assassination or capture made Crimson Sky inexorable and launched the war. An immediate fanatic assault upon Kyoto, led by Sudara, his heir, with all the legions, to gain possession of that city and the puppet emperor. This would be coupled with secret, meticulously planned insurrections in 50 provinces, which had been prepared over the years against such eventuality. All targets, passes, cities, castles, bridges, had long since been selected. There were enough arms and men and resolve to carry it through.
It's a good plan, Torunaga thought, but it will fail if I don't lead it. Sudara will fail. Not through want of trying or courage or intelligence, or because of treachery. Merely because Sudara hasn't yet enough knowledge or experience, and cannot carry enough of the uncommitted daimyos with him. And also because Osaka Castle and the heir, Yeimon, stand inviolate in the path, the rallying point for all the enmity and jealousy that I've earned in 52 years of war.
Torunaga's war had begun when he was 6, and had been ordered as hostage into the enemy camp, then reprieved, then captured by other enemies, and pawned again, to be repawned until he was 12. At 12, he had led his first patrol and won his first battle.
So many battles. None lost.
but so many enemies. And now they're gathering together. Sudara will fail. You're the only one who could win with Crimson Sky, perhaps. The Taiko could do it, absolutely. But it would be better not to have to implement Crimson Sky.
Chapter 14. For Blackthorn, it was a hellish dawn. He was locked in a death battle with a fellow convict. The prize was a cup of gruel. Both men were naked. Whenever a convict was put into this vast, single-storied wooden cell block, his clothes were taken away. A clothed man occupied more space, and clothes could hide weapons. The murky and suffocating room was 50 paces long and 10 wide, and packed with naked, sweating Japanese. Scarcely any light filtered through the boards and beams that made up the walls and low ceiling. Blackthorn could barely stand erect. His skin was blotched and scratched from the man's broken nails and the wood burns from the walls. Finally, he butted his head into the man's face, grabbed his throat, and hammered the man's head against the beams until he was senseless. Then he threw the body aside and charged through the sweating mass to the place he had claimed in the corner, and he readied himself for another attack. At dawn, it had been feeding time, and the guards began passing the cups of gruel and water through the small opening. This was the first food and water that had been given them since he was put inside at dusk the previous day. The lining up for food and water had been unusually calm. Without discipline, no one would eat. Then this ape-like man, unshaven, filthy, lice-ridden, had chopped him over the kidneys and taken his ration, while the others waited to see what would happen. But Blackthorn had been in too many seafaring brawls to be beaten with one treacherous blow. So he feigned helplessness, then kicked out viciously, and the fight had been joined. Now, in the corner, Blackthorn saw to his amazement that one of the men was offering the cup of gruel and the water that he had presumed lost. He took it and thanked the man. The corners were the choicest areas. A beam ran lengthwise along the earthen floor, partitioning the room into two sections. In each section were three rows of men, two rows facing each other, their backs to the wall or beam, the other row between them. Only the weak and the sick took the center row. When the stronger men in the outer rows wanted to stretch their legs, they had to do so over those in the middle. Blackthorn saw two corpses, swollen and fly-blown, in one of the middle rows. But the feeble and dying men nearby seemed to ignore them. He could not see far in the heating gloom. Sun was baking the wood already. There were latrine buckets, but the stench was terrible because the sick had befouled themselves and the places in which they hunched. From time to time, guards opened the iron door and names were called out. The men bowed to their comrades and left, but others were soon brought in and the space occupied again. All the prisoners seemed to have accepted their lot and tried as best they could to live unselfishly in peace with their immediate neighbors. One man against the wall began to vomit. He was quickly shoved into the middle row and collapsed, half suffocated, under the weight of legs. Blackthorn had to close his eyes and fight to control his terror and claustrophobia.
Bastard Toranaga! I pray I get the opportunity of putting you inside here one day! Bastard guards!
Last night, when they had ordered him to strip, he had fought them with a bitter hopelessness, knowing he was beaten, fighting only because he refused to surrender passively. And then he had been forced through the door. There were four such cell blocks. They were on the edge of the city, in a paved compound within high stone walls. Outside the walls was a roped-off area of beaten earth beside the river. Five crosses were erected there. Naked men and one woman had been bound straddled to the crosspieces by their wrists and ankles. And while Blackthorn had walked on the perimeter following his samurai guards, he saw executioners with long lances thrust the lances crisscross into the victims' chests while the crowd jeered. Then the five were cut down, and five more put up, and samurai came forward and hacked the corpses into pieces with their long swords, laughing all the while.
Bloody gutter-festering bastards!
Unnoticed, the man Blackthorn had fought was coming to his senses. He lay in the middle row. Blood had congealed on one side of his face, and his nose was smashed. Suddenly he leapt at Blackthorn, oblivious of the men in his way. Blackthorn saw him coming at the last moment, frantically parried the onslaught, and knocked him in a heap. The prisoners that the man fell on cursed him, and one of them, heavy-set and built like a bulldog, chopped him viciously on the neck with the side of his hand. There was a dry snap, and the man's head sagged. The bulldog man lifted the half-shaven head by its scraggy, lice-infected topknot, and let it fall. He looked up at Blackthorn, said something gutturally, smiled with bare, toothless gums, and shrugged.
"Thanks," Blackthorn said, struggling for breath, thankful that his assailant had not had Murat's skill at unarmed combat. "My namu Anjinsan," he said, pointing at himself. "You?" "Arsu des, Anjinsan."
Bulldog pointed at himself and sucked in his breath.
"Minikui."
"Minikui, son."
"Ay."
And he added a spate of Japanese. Blackthorn shrugged tiredly.
"Wakarimasen."
"I don't understand."
"Ah, so des."
Bulldog chatted briefly with his neighbors. Then he shrugged again, and Blackthorn shrugged, and together they lifted the dead man and put him with the other corpses. When they came back to the corner, no one had taken their places. Most of the inmates were asleep, or fitfully trying to sleep. Blackthorn felt filthy and horrible and near death.
"Don't worry," he told himself. "You've a long way to go before you die." "No, I can't live long in this hellhole. There are too many men. Oh, God, let me out. Why is the room swimming up and down? And is that Rodriguez floating up from the depths with moving pincers for eyes? I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I've got to get out of here. Please, please don't put more wood in the fire. And what are you doing here, croak lad? I thought they let you go. I thought you were back in the village. But now we're here in the village. And how did I get here? It's so cool. And there's that girl. So pretty. Down by the docks. But why are they dragging her away to the shore? The naked samurai. Oh, me, they're laughing. Why, down across the sand. Blood marks in the sand. All naked. Me naked. Hags and villagers and children. And there's the cauldron. And we're in the cauldron. And now, no more wood, no more wood. I'm drowning in liquid filth. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. I'm dying. 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 In nomine Patris, et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti. That's the last sacrament, and you're Catholic. We're all Catholic. And you'll burn or drown in piss and burn with fire. The fire. The fire.
He dragged himself out of the nightmare, his ears exploding with the peaceful, earth-shattering finality of the last sacrament. For a moment, he did not know if he was awake or asleep, because his disbelieving ears heard the Latin benediction again, and his incredulous eyes were seeing a wrinkled old scarecrow of a European stooped over the middle row, 15 paces away. The toothless old man had long, filthy hair and a matted beard and broken nails, and wore a foul, threadbare smock. He raised a hand like a vulture's claw and held up the wooden cross over the half-hidden body. A shaft of sun caught it momentarily. Then he closed the dead man's eyes and mumbled a prayer and glanced up. He saw Blackthorn staring at him.
"Mother of God, art thou real?"
The man croaked in coarse peasant Spanish, crossing himself.
"Yes," Blackthorn said in Spanish. "Who are you?"
The old man groped his way over, mumbling to himself. The other inmates let him pass or step on them or over them without saying a word. He stared down at Blackthorn through rheumy eyes, his face warted.
Oh, blessed Virgin, the Signor is real. Who art thou? I'm Friar Domingo. Domingo! Domingo of the sacred order of St. Francis, the order.
And then for a while his words became a jumble of Japanese and Latin and Spanish. His head twitched, and he wiped away the ever-present spittle that dribbled to his chin.
The Signor is real?
Yes, I'm real.
Blackthorn eased himself up. The priest muttered another Hail Mary, the tears coursing his cheeks. He kissed the cross repeatedly, and would have got down on his knees if there had been space. Bulldog shook his neighbour awake. Both squatted and made just enough room for the priest to sit.
By the blessed St. Francis, my prayers have been answered. Thou, I thought that I was seeing another apparition, Signor, a ghost. Yes, an evil spirit. I've seen so many, so many. How long is the Signor here? It's hard for a body to see in the gloom, and my eyes, they're not good. How long?
Yesterday. And you?
I don't know, Signor. A long time. I'm put here in September. It was in the year of our Lord, 1598.
It's May now. 1600.
1600!
A moaning cry distracted the monk. He got up and picked his way over the bodies like a spider, encouraging a man here, touching another there, his Japanese fluent. He could not find the dying man, so he droned the last rites to that part of the cell, and blessed everyone, and no one minded.
Come with me, my son.
Without waiting, the monk hobbled down the cage, through the mass of men, into the gloom. Blackthorn hesitated, not wanting to leave his place. Then he got up and followed. After 10 paces, he looked back. His place had vanished. It seemed impossible that he had ever been there at all. He continued down the length of the hut. In the far corner was, incredibly, an open space. Just enough room for a small man to lie down in. It contained a few pots and bowls and an ancient straw mat. Father Domingo stepped through the men into the space and beckoned him. The surrounding Japanese watched silently, letting Blackthorn pass.
They are my flock, Signor. They are all my sons in the blessed Lord Jesus. I've converted so many here. This one's John, and here's Mark and Methuselah.
The priest stopped for breath.
I'm so tired. Tired. I must.
His words trailed off, and he slept. At dusk, more food arrived. When Blackthorn began to get up, one of the nearby Japanese motioned him to stay and brought him a well-filled bowl. Another man gently patted the priest awake, offering the food.
Here,
the old man said, shaking his head, a smile on his face, and pushed the bowl back into the man's hands.
Here, Father Summer.
The priest allowed himself to be persuaded, and ate a little, then got up, his joints creaking, and handed his bowl to one of those in the middle row. This man touched the priest's hand to his forehead, and he was blessed.
I'm so pleased to see another of my own kind,
the priest said, sitting beside Blackthorn again, his peasant voice thick and sibilant. He pointed weakly to the other end of the cell block.
One of my flock said the Signor used the word pilot, engine. The Signor is a pilot?
Yes.
There are others of the Signor's crew here?
No, I'm alone. Why are you here?
If the Signor is alone, the Signor came from Manila?
No, I've never been to Asia before.
Backthorn said carefully, his Spanish excellent.